it's shocking to me to think that for 28 years I've been working this issue, as Rob suggested in his introduction, and I would have never imagined that it would still be unresolved today. And therefore, Giora's paper that is presented to you is, I think, a very useful product because it gives us an opportunity to check our bearings and to challenge our assumptions that after 28 years, it's about time we did that. They say the definition of a fanatic is someone who keeps trying the same thing in the belief the results will be different. And certainly, Giora's paper has made me wonder whether I'm a two-state solution fanatic. And it's very timely that we have this challenge from an Israeli perspective, because of course the Palestinians are doing the very same thing from their own perspective, questioning whether a two-state solution is viable anymore. They of course are focused on settlement activity, which Europe looks at from an Israeli point of view, and comes at the moment. But Giora raises three other concerns that proponents of a two-state solution will need to take into account. The rise of Hamas, which seeks its own version of a one-state solution, that is a Palestinian state in all historic Palestine, in place of Israel. He raises a I think, a very important question about the viability of a Palestinian state in circumstances that now, as a result of all that's happened, is more questionable than before because of the Israeli approach of separating the Israeli and Palestinian economies. It was always possible to argue that the Palestinian state would be viable if you assumed that some 100,000 Palestinian workers would be coming into Israel every day. It automatically resolved all of the issues of viability. But that's no longer the case. It may be the case in the future once a stable settlement has been achieved. Certainly, looking at it from where we are today, we would have to say, as Giora does, there's a real question mark about the economic viability of a state which would be dependent not on Israel, but on its Arab state neighbors, Egypt and Jordan. And it's not at all clear that Egypt's or Jordan's economic interests to provide the kind of alternative that Israel used to provide in terms of the viability of the state. And then he has detailed new Israeli security concerns, which we who propose the two-state solution do very well to consider seriously. Not just because they come from the Euro Island, who of course was responsible for strategic planning in the Israel Defense Forces and was then National Security Advisor to Ariel Sharon, so this is where he lives, but also because the issues which he raises are serious concerns and would have to be addressed in a way that we didn't have to address them back in 2000 at Camp David and afterwards when we were trying to deal with security issues and actually I think make more progress there than in any other area. In particular his point about rockets being a new threat that do not lend themselves to an easy solution and the dangers that Israelis perceive from a Jerusalem that would be divided under any two-state solution, and the potential that could cause for the kind of terrorist activity against civilians that we're already witnessing today, or witnessing yesterday in Jerusalem. and certainly have witnessed for the last few years. So in that regard, I think that Burris has done very important stuff, and if you haven't read it, I really think that you should, and it deserves serious attention. On the issue of evacuating settlers, what Giora has basically laid out is a problem that Israel has in terms of evacuating 100,000 settlers and paying for the evacuation. And he uses that to raise questions about whether that could actually be brought on. This raises an interesting point, it seems to me, that has kind of parallels. Israelis have for a long time, basically since the last Intifada, argued that they don't have a partner to implement an agreement. Abu Mazen and Salam Fayyad have shown a willingness to engage in peace talks and negotiate just an agreement, but there's a big question mark on the Israeli side about their capability to implement. And what Giora does, although he doesn't really, what actually does understand, is that the settlement problem raises a parallel question about Israel's ability to implement. And in effect, we have a lack of capability now, or questionable capability on both sides when it comes to implementation of the two-state solution, which also is grist for Israel. But I would argue that most of the problems he raises are actually amenable to solutions. Some of them require political will on the part of the two sides. For instance, I think he usefully points out that for the refugee problem to be resolved, will require Palestinian leaders to stand up in front of their people and say what only Sarah Nusayder and Yasser Al-Grabo alone have been willing to say, which is, you're not going home. There is no right of return to Israel. It's not a serious proposition. Nobody in a position of responsibility has yet been able to, yet been willing to stand up and say that indeed. Say that, in my view, the principal reason why Yasser Arafat did not accept the offer on hand at the end of the Clinton administration was precisely because he did not have the courage to stand up in front of his people and tell them the truth. We got you Jerusalem, could have said, but you're not going to. You refugees are not going to have the right to return to Israel. He preferred to punt, wait for George W. Bush to get him a better deal. Getting out of his dilemma. And even though Abu Mazen at times has hinted at this, he has not been willing to stand up and speak the truth to his people. So there is a lack of political will on that side, in that regard. On the settlement side, we've had Israeli leaders who make clear that it is in Israel's interest to protect against a demographic threat to give up the West Bank and rid Israel of the burden of occupation, that means evacuating settlers. But when it actually comes to dismantling illegal outposts, or unauthorized outposts, a commitment made by successive prime ministers to the American president, promise made, it's observed in the breach. And so here too you have an example of the lack of political. But in different circumstances, that political will may indeed manifest itself. In other words, in both these cases, these are not insurmountable obstacles. They require courageous leadership and a willingness to speak the truth to your people and a willingness to take on the fanatics on either side. Hamas and its terrorist cadres and Palestine Islamic Jihad and so on, and on the other side, settler extremists who are determined to thwart them all in the pursuit of their messianic objectives. Dora makes much of the Gaza evacuation as a kind of failure. I actually think it was a success in that regard. It showed that an Israeli government, Israeli Prime Minister, encouraged by Ariel Sharon, does have the ability to bring the body politic behind him in favour of an evacuation. And if those people have not been effectively absorbed into Israel, then it's a failure again of the state to do so. It's not an insurmountable obstacle, nor is the amount of money. If it's $30 million that would be required, a similar amount of money would be required for resolving the Palestinian problem. But in the context of a two-state solution, I believe that money would be forthcoming. And this brings me to the heart, my belief that the two-state solution is still viable, notwithstanding all of these problems. If I look back over 28 years, with a long view of history, I'm impressed by actually the progress that has been made rather than the obstacles that have been revealed. Israel now enjoys peace with Egypt and peace with Jordan. They may not be warm and fuzzy pieces, but they're pieces that have endured and have demonstrated the value of state-to-state peace agreements. The Arab League, as you're by now familiar, has come around over 30 years to reverse its three notes of Khartoum back in 1968, Khartoum Arab Summit, to the three yeses of peace with Israel and then the conflict with Israel and normalization of relations with Israel. Majorities in both Israel and on the Palestinian side continue to support the idea of a two-state solution. It's just that they don't believe it's actually going to happen because of your efforts. Few of that sense of despair, but it's not that they would not support it if they thought it was viable. And Israeli governments have come a long way over the years to accept the two-state solution. People forget that Yitzhak Rabin, who first treated with Yasser Arafat, actually was opposed to a Palestinian state. Was not willing to agree to an independent Palestinian state. And perhaps by 1995 he was coming around to it, but it was Ariel Sharon, for instance, that more than anybody else shifted the bulk of the Israeli book to accept the idea of an independent Palestinian state. Of course, one can point to the fact that Hamas is rising and Hamas does not accept it, but one could also make the argument that slowly but surely Hamas is coming to terms with Israel's reality through the informal ceasefires now negotiated with Israel in Gaza, which it is policing far more effectively than Yasser Arafat ever policed the territories that were under his control. And of course, the Israeli and Palestinian governments have been negotiating a two-state solution for the last year, and you can poo-poo this and say that, well, they really didn't achieve anything. But I would say that the jury is still out on that, but I think they've had very serious negotiations. Surprise, surprise, they've come around more or less precisely to the place where they were when Bill Clinton negotiated the Clinton parameters at the end of 2000. And I think Yura would agree with that. But that just demonstrates that if there's to be a two-state solution, these are the kinds of issues that are going to have to be resolved. Territorial swaps and